we're reading before every single parsha? Sorry, before every single Rosh Chodesh? No, we don't have, right? Cheshvan's coming, right? So what is so special about Parshat HaChodesh that is before Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Number one, what is Rosh Chodesh Nisan for us? Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Ulechodshei Hashanah. What does that mean? That it is the way we count. It was the first Rosh Chodesh B'nai Israel received. But also to know when Rosh Chodesh is, what is so important about this? Because what is just going to happen 2 weeks later, it's going to be Korban Pesach, right? It's going to be Korban Pesach, and it's going to be on Yud Dalet Ben Harbayim, and you really have to know what time it's going to be, because it's very important that we do it Yud Dalet Ben Harbayim, right? And then we have Korban Pesach, and then we're going to have Leil Pesach, and the timing is very important. So let me ask you a question. Why do we have Haftarat, Zachor, Maftir, Zachor, Shabbat, Zachor in the middle of the Arba Parshiot? Number one, what does that show us about Shabbat Zachor if this was already slated out as one of the Arba Parshiot? That what kind of importance, right, does Shabbat Zachor, Parshat Zachor hold? It's almost on par with what? Preparation for what? It's as if, right, Shabbat Zachor is preparation for Purim, like the Shlosha Parshiot, right, or Shalosh Parshiot, right, are preparation for Pesach, which means you can't go into Pesach without preparation, without these Arba Parshiot. So too, you can't go into Purim without the preparation of Amalek. Just like you're preparing yourself, you're preparing the Beit HaMikdash for Pesach, you also have to go into Purim with a certain kind of preparation. And we look at Purim, right, as a time of Hatzalat HaNefesh and Hatzalat HaGuf, right, almost as if it's like Yitziat Mitzrayim on some level, and we're going to see that tonight, which means, even though we think of Purim as a holiday where we have a lot of simcha, and we absolutely do, right, and it's a real celebration of simcha, and we have mishteh, and it's Yom Tov, Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu, but we're going to see that it needs preparation. You have to have ta'anit, Esther, before we even go into Purim, right, fasting, when we read the Megillah. And we're also going to see that we have certain other parallels as well. Who are the main heroines, right, in Yitziat Mitzrayim? Mm-hmm. Who are the main heroines in Yitziat Mitzrayim? Mm-hmm. Miriam. What is the famous Midrash? Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Shayubo Toador Nigalu Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. And that's why, what do we do on Purim? Pesach. Right, the women are obligated in our Bakosot Yain. Many views were obligated in Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. Also, right, we are involved with Pirsumei Nisa. We almost have all the mitzvot of Leil HaSeder, right, and almost all mitzvot Pesach, right, because the Aseh and Lot Aseh. So Pesach, right, women play a very important role, and Afen Ayu Bo Toanes. And there are two ways to understand Afen Ayu Bo Toanes. One, Afen Ayu Bo Toanes. What's the view of the Baal HaTosfot? They were also on the nest. They were also saved. What's the view of the Rashbam? Shehem, Ikaranes. They're the main, right, individuals who brought around this nest. But we also know, of course, right, who is the main one, except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Who is the main one who brought us out of Mitzrayim? Who really did all the nisim and really helped us get out? Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu really helped us get out of Mitzrayim, right? Am I using the word? Did I mix that up? Right? Moshe Rabbeinu really took us out of Mitzrayim. On the other hand, if you look at Purim, what do we say about Purim as well? Afhen, Hayu Bo Toanes, right? And who is involved and who is really one of the main individuals who brought about the Nes? It is Esther, right? And women are chayev on every single mitzvah of Purim. Because Afhen Hayu Bo Toanes, because they're Ikar, Hanes. But who else could have been the main individual who we see as the hero of Purim? It could be Mordechai. And yet, who is really the catalyst for Purim? It's Esther. And what do we call Megillat Esther? We call Megillat Esther. And what do we call Ta'anit? We call it Ta'anit Esther. So we're going to see there are a lot of parallels in this way between Pesach and Purim. We have another one as well. Right? On Pesach, it was Miagon LaSimcha, right? Just like we see on Purim, right? Mi'afela le'ora. The idea that Bnei Israel were almost destroyed in Mitzrayim, spiritually, by Avdut, and would not be freed, so too we have the same idea in Purim, which means Bnei Israel, we're almost going to be annihilated. You have to understand, right, that Purim, right, is a celebration that we escaped annihilation. Think about it, right? When Haman sends out his decree, what does he say? Right? We're going to destroy everybody. And even Taf and Hashim, Biyom Echad Ushlalam Lavoz. Which means there was a decree on 90% of the Jewish population, because that's where they lived, in the Persian Empire. 90% of the Jewish population was going to be destroyed. If you want to talk about it in Holocaust terms, right, they would be sent to the gas chambers, they would be sent to concentration camps, they were going to be destroyed, and almost no one was going to be left. That is what Bnei Israel were standing before when it was Purim. And for us to celebrate and to realize, right, how close we were to that situation, that's why Purim is such a great simcha. Because it's really on that cusp of destruction to absolute salvation. And again, who played that central role in tipping that one way to the other? Esther was instrumental, right, of course, but it's Maaseh Hashem. Okay, so we're going to start with our Mikorot. We're doing source number one. Right, where do we have the sources for the Arba Parshiot? It's in Mishnah Masechet Megillah, Perek Gimel Mishnah Dalet. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shechaliot B'Shabbat. So we read Parshat Shkalim. Right, Chaliot B'Toch HaShabbat Maktimim L'Sheavar U'Mafsikin L'Shabbat Acheret. Which means, right, we always read Parshat Shkalim before Rosh Chodesh Adar. How long do we usually prepare before a Chag? Max 30 days. Right, 3 days before a Chag, we usually prepare for a Chag. But for Pesach, because it's so important, it's over 45 days, which means before Rosh Chodesh Adar, we're already preparing for Pesach. So we're not going to have such a big preparation for Purim, because Purim is not Pesach. But, right, very rarely do we have actual Kriya B'Torah before a Chag in order to prepare us for it, right? Very few times do we ever have that kind of preparation in an extra Kriya B'Torah. So Purim is really important that we prepare for it by the Kriya B'Torah. And what's the Kriya B'Torah that we do? Bashniya Zachor, as we mentioned before, Bashlishit Para Aduma Bar Ve'ita Chodesh Hazeh Lachem. What is the Haftarah that we read on Shabbat Zachor? What's the Haftarah that we're going to read this week? The story of what? I have a terrible head cold, as you can see and hear, so you have to speak louder for me to hear. What is the Haftarah that we read this week? Not Yecheskel. What is the Haftarah? You can look at the next source. But what is the Haftarah that we read this Shabbat? The Haftarah. What is Haftarah? Shmuel, okay, is the Haftarah. What is Shmuel? From what set of books? From Navi. Haftarah is always from Navi. So this week we're reading the Torah, second Sefer Torah, the Maftir. We're going to read from Sefer Dvarim, Zachor Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. We're going to read the Haftarah of the story of Shaul and Amalek. What is the story of Shaul and Amalek? Someone. What is the story of Shaul and Amalek? I'll take volunteers.
Shaul is commanded to kill Amalek, so he goes and he destroys everyone except the animals and Agag, which he gets in trouble for.
Okay, so Shaul is supposed to destroy all of Amalek, right? He takes from the spoils, right? He does not destroy everybody, and he also leaves Melech Agag alive. So, of course, what do we see the whole Purim story, right? If Shaul leaves Melech Agag alive, right, what is Haman? He is Ha'agagi. So we're going to see a lot of parallels between what's going on in Chumash, what's going on in Navi, and what's going on in Ketuvim. Let's go on to source number three, right? So that was in source number two that we read this Haftarah. Source number three, right? Source number three. Mishnah Masechet Megillah Per Gimel Mishnah Vav. Right? We have to read some Torah reading, right? Even on Purim, just like we have a Torah reading, right? The Kriya B'Torah on Chanukah. And there we read the Nisi'im. What's the Torah reading that we read on Purim during the day and Shacharit in the morning? Vayavo Amalek. Where is that found? That's in Shmot. So we have two stories in the Torah, right, that tell us about the story of Amalek, which means that's also important. We have two different descriptions, right, of the Amalek incident. And our question is, who is Amalek? And that's what I would like to discuss a little today. What are we trying to remember on Purim? What are we trying to remember on Shabbat Zachor? What is so important, right, about remembering what Amalek wanted to do to us? So where do Amalek and Bnei Israel go back to? They go all the way back to Sefer Breshit. We're going to compare Yaakov and Esav. Why are we going to compare Yaakov and Esav if we want to talk about Bnei Israel and Amalek? Because who is Amalek's grandfather? Esav is Amalek's grandfather. So when we want to talk about the paradigms, right, we're going to talk about Esav, right, and we're going to talk about Yaakov. We're going to talk about Amalek, and we're going to talk about Bnei Israel. So let's go to Bereshit Perek Kafei. Right? This is when Yaakov and Esav are born. And what is Yaakov? Ish Tam Yoshev Oalim, and Esav is Ish Tzayid Ish Yodea. Ish Yodea Tzayid Ish Sadeh. So what do we see here? They're opposites. Right from the very beginning, we describe Yaakov and Esav as opposite. Opposite ideologies, opposite attitudes, opposite realities. How does Yaakov buy the Bchora? How does Yaakov buy the Bchora? With what? With lentil soup, nazid adashim. And what is Esav's reaction? Vayochal, vayesht, vayakam, vayelech, vayivez Esav et habchora. Even after he sells it and he's sated and he's full, he already rejects the Bchora and he despises it. Vayivez Esav et habchora. So we're going to try to see the language that's similar in the story of Yaakov and Esav, in the story of Shaul and Amalek, and in the story of the Megillah, which means all of these stories we're going to see are linked together. And look at source number 4, so we're going up one source, right? The Gemara Masechet Megillah says, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Shalcha lahem Esther l'chachamim kva'uni l'dorot. What does that mean, that Esther sent to the chachamim kva'uni l'dorot? What does that mean? It's a real question, you just, I really don't hear. Say it again. Okay, I should be canonized, right, in Tanakh, which means the story that I am telling should be canonized in Tanakh, and not only the story should be canonized in Tanakh, but what goes along with the story of Megillat Purim? What is the end filled with? All the halachot that we do on Purim. So Esther requested l'chachamim kva'uni l'dorot. And look at the rationalization that Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i gives for why it was included. K'tov zot zikaron basefer v'sim v'oznei Yehoshua. We have a very important pasuk, and follow me. Okay, we have a very important pasuk. Please look at number 9. So on page 2, number 9. We have a very important pasuk, okay, in the original story of Amalek. We have a very important pasuk in the original story of Amalek. And look at, for now, pasuk Yudalid. After the whole story of Moshe and Yoshua trying to defeat Amalek, what do Moshe and Yoshua only succeed in doing? Weakening Amalek. They don't destroy them completely. And if you had to pick two individuals who would be the best at fighting and the best at davening, who would you pick? I would pick Moshe and Yoshua. And even them two together cannot defeat Amalek. They only weaken Amalek. So that shows that Amalek is real evil. And what is the result? Hashem says to Moshe, we're in Pasuk Yudalid, K'tov zot zikaron basefer v'sim bo'oznei Yoshua. Write this as a memorial in the book and put it in the ears of the Yoshua. Writing it, having a remembrance of it, right? Put it in a book and then give it over to the next leader of the generation in his ears, which means our encounter with Amalek, we have to tell it over and write about it and remember it. What other chag do we talk about writing, remembering, and telling over, right, for generation to generation? Yitziat Mitzrayim. Which means the language the Torah is using about Amalek is similar to the language that we're using with remembering Yitziat Mitzrayim. Which means on one level, remembering what Amalek did, right, is a little bit like a shoresh of emunah, a source and an important root of emunah. So much so that we know that what's part of the shesh zechirot that we say, right, after davening every day? What's one of them? Remembering what Amalek did to us, which means it's on par with Yitziat Mitzrayim, it's on par with Shabbat. We have this idea of remembering what Amalek did, because K'tov zot zikaron basefer. But who is responsible in the first story that we have about Amalek? Who's responsible for destroying Amalek? What is ki macho emche et zecher Amalek? Hashem. Which Hashem sees it as his job to destroy Amalek from under the Shamayim. And Moshe builds a Mizbeach and he calls it Hashem Nisi. Hashem is my miracle worker, but also Hashem is my beacon. A Nes is like a beacon, a pole. Why do they say Hashem Nisi? Because what did Amalek want to do? Eradicate Bnei Israel, eradicate Shem Hashem, eradicate goodness, eradicate moral and ethical behavior in the world. Because you have to imagine this. Bnei Israel are coming out of Mitzrayim. And look at the language that we have. Come with me in Dvarim. We're going to go back to Shemot, but look in number 10 in Dvarim. Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek baderech betzeitchem mitzrayim. Part of coming out of Mitzrayim, right? And the whole idea of Yitziat Mitzrayim, what did Amalek want to do to it? Which means, what is Yitziat Mitzrayim for us? Shoresh Emunah. Hashem saved us. Hashem brought us out of Mitzrayim. Right? We were freed. And what was happening right after we were freed, but before we reached Har Sinai, what did Amalek want to do? Eradicate us completely. Imagine, please, that you're after the Civil War, and you have thousands and thousands and thousands of black slaves coming out of the South, and they're marching. Finally, they are freed. And then you have a group, right, of militias, who come and slaughter thousands and thousands and thousands of them. What would be our attitude towards this group? What level are they? Immoral, unethical, evil, right? How could someone be so depraved to do something like that? That is what Amalek wanted to do to Am Yisrael. What's the language that we have in the Haftarah, the Maftir that we read this week? We're still on number 10, page 2. Asher korcha baderech, Vayizanev b'chakol ha-nechshalim acharecha, ve'ata ayef v'yageh v'lo yareh Elokim. They went after the weakest. They went after the people who have no other way of controlling their lives, of having a path, right? And yareh Elokim could either be about Amalek or about Bnei Israel. Before we had a chance to really meet Hashem, before we had a chance to really be at Har Sinai, they wanted to destroy us. And what would that do to all of Yitziat Mitzrayim? It would make it null and void. There would be no Yitziat Mitzrayim. Amalek wanted to destroy everything the Yitziat Mitzrayim stood for, stopping Bnei Israel from reaching Har Sinai. And that's why here, in number 10, right, in Dvarim Perek Kafei, that we're reading this Shabbat, what does it say? Timche et zecher Amalek, mitachad ha-shamayim lo tishkach. In Shemot, whose job was it to destroy Amalek? It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Dvarim, it's our job. And in a sense, that makes us what of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's? The messengers, the shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which means in Mechiyat Amalek, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're not doing it because we think they're evil. We're not doing it because we are the ones who are making this value judgment. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu points that evil in this world has to be destroyed. Look what it says in number 9. We're back on page 2, number 9, Shemot Perek Yud Zayin. It says, Vayomer pasuk tet zayin, Vayomer ki yad al keska milchama la Hashem ba Amalek midor dor. What is Hashem saying and what is Moshe saying? Ki yad al keska. How should this really be said? You all know or should know, right? This famous midrash that Rashi quotes. What is ki yad al keska? What is missing here? The aleph for kisei and the yud kei vav kei, right? Should be Shem Hashem male. So what is that famous phrase? You could say it in English if you want. You could say it any way that you want. What's not complete? The seat of Hashem, the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not complete, and his name is not complete until Amalek is going to be destroyed. Which means what? Which means when they are around, or their concepts, or their ideas are around, the majesty of Hashem does not reign supreme in the world. Which means, what are Amalek? They are a conflict with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are really limiting Hashem's sovereignty and name, right, in this world. And the Sifrei says, it says Zachor here, Zachor tasher asah lecha Amalek, and then it says, right, Lo tishkach is the last two words. So what are the two different views? What does it mean, Zachor and Lo tishkach? What does the Sifrei say? What are the two different ways we're doing Zachor and Lo tishkach? What are the two different ways? The halacha is, right, the Sifrei at least suggests, what is Zachor? You have to remember Bapeh. And that's what we have to read. Parshat Zachor out loud, right? In Shul and also in the morning of Purim. So Zachor, you have to do it actively, Bapeh. It's a mitzvah to say. What's Lo Tishkach? Right? Balev. Right? You have to remember it in your heart. And the Rambam, right, says that really our main mitzvah is this idea of remembering, right? And not forgetting, saying it bapeh, but the Rambam doesn't mention any issue of milchama, because what already happen, right? Who really is the one who finally destroyed all of Amalek, right? It's really going to be Esther, which means Esther destroys the physical Amalek. Haman Agagi is our last remnant that we know and that we can identify. But Rav Shimshon Ophel Hirsch explains on the Rambam and the Ramban says that we have to remember Amalek because we have to know what evil is. And Amalek represents evil for us. And we have to remember what that is. But Rav Shimshon Ophel Hirsch says, so why do we have to remember what it is? Which means at this point, it's not about fighting them physically in a war because they're finished. We don't know who they are as individuals. There's no one person you could point out is Amalek. Today we only have this concept. We have to remember this concept. Why do we have to remember? If they're done physically, then why do we have to remember this concept? So Rav Shimshon Ophel Hirsch says, we have to remember about Amalek because we have to remember what evil is. And every day we have to say to ourselves, this is evil, this is bad, and I'm not like that. And if you have any midot, or you see that your nation is behaving in a certain way, or Am Yisrael is getting midot migunot, what do you have to do all the time? Reevaluate, reevaluate, reevaluate. So in a sense, by us reading Amalek before Purim, it's a certain reevaluation. It's a way of introspection. It's a way to see what is justice, what is truth, what is good, what is evil, which means that is part of the process that we have to go through all year long. But it's especially true before Purim. Because Purim, when we were freed and we have to know what we were freed from. We have to know what evil is and the kind of things that we have to combat, the ideas. Right? And the notions that our job as Am Yisrael is to combat. Because what was Avram told, right, in the beginning of Sefer Breshit? What is his job with his children, with his descendants, to teach? Mishpat Utzdakah. That is the job, right, of Avram Avinu. And of course, also to, later on, as we know, to spread Torah and Mitzvot. So let's go back, right? We're going back to Sefer Breshit, right? We're back now on number 5. We're back to Breshit Perek Kaf Hei. So we're doing a contrast between Esav, right, and Yaakov. Esav's willing to sell the Bechorah. How does Yaakov buy the Bechorah, buy the Beracha, excuse me, right, receive the Beracha in Breshit, Perek Kaf Zayin, number 6, right? We saw the first time he does it with soup. How does he get the Beracha the second time around? What does he bring to his father? Gdi Izim. We see in both times, what does Yaakov do, right? He defeats Esav through food. Two food events, Yaakov defeats Esav. Where else do we have in Megillat Esther that Haman, Esav, is going to be defeated by two food events? What does Esther do? She makes two mishtaot. She makes two food events, which means we're going to see, it's very interesting, that we have this parallel. And yet, when Yaakov, right, receives the beracha from his father, and Esav loses it, look what happens in Perek Kaf Zayin. The first time when Yaakov receives the bechorah from Esav, what is Esav's response? Vayochal vayesht, vayakam vayelech, vayivez Esav et apchor. Does he care about it? Does he care about it?
No.
Not at all. He despises it. Eh. But what happens a second time around when Yaakov receives the bracha? Does Esav also say, eh, I don't care about it, you know? I'm sorry I didn't get the bracha. What is Esav's response? Look at number 6, Pasuk Lamed Daled. Breshit Perek of Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Daled. What is Esav's response here? Does he say, eh, I don't care, I lost the bracha. Ah, Yaakov did it to me again. What is his response? Vayitzak. Right? Se'aka gdola umara ad me'od. Here he is really upset. He is really angry. Now, what is so interesting about that? Because we all know, and the Breshit Rabbah points this out, and it's a great, right, comment. Look at page number 3. And you all remember this, but it's always good to see it inside exactly. Page number 3, we're in the Megillah. Okay, I have to mix it up a little for myself because I give the shiur a lot, so I'm sorry, you know. You've got to move around, or if I say it the same way all over the every time, you know, it just kills me. So you'll have to forgive me for our moving around. So we're number 18, we're in Perek Daled, right? What does it say in Pasuk Aleph? What does it say in Pasuk Aleph? Right? Mordechai, when he finds out what Haman wants to do, he rends his clothes. He wears sak va'efer. He goes out into the town, and what does he do? Vayitzak, ze'aka, Gdola Umara. What does that mean? When Yaakov got the brachot from Yitzchak, and Esav is crying, and he's really upset about it, it doesn't mean that Yaakov's going to go scot-free. Because what is going to happen? When Esav is crying out, Yaakov still has the bracha, but that crying out has some kind of effect. Which means I like to call this spiritual thermodynamics. What do we know about thermodynamics? Right? What is the rule of entropy? What is the rule of energy in this world? Right? It's never created or destroyed. So in a sense, the Rambad, who loves this idea, he doesn't call it this, but I called it this, and I like the formulation. So if I say it one more time, you know, you'll forgive me. Right? What is this idea? According to the Ramban, right, there is the spiritual energy in the world. And when you do something, what is there always going to be in Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim? There's always going to be a consequence. Everything has a consequence. Either your future generations follow your role model, or if you bring a certain kind of spiritual energy into this world, a certain event, what's always going to happen? There always has to be a reaction to it. There always will be some kind of response. So what happens? Yaakov does defeat Esav and he gets the bracha. But because he really received the bracha in a way, right, that might not be, right, ideal, so what happens later on when Haman, Esav's great-great-great-great-grandson, right, is trying to defeat Am Yisrael, what gets his hand that he is able to really oppress Yaakov? It's almost like this energy, right? This koach is helping Esav, right? Haman, right? Oppress Mordechai and Bnei Israel for a certain amount of time. And that's what the Breishit Rabbah says, that when Mordechai is screaming out, it's as a response, right, to when Esav cried out. Why is Mordechai so upset? Right? Why is Mordechai so upset in this situation? Why is he so upset? Number one, as we said, Bnei Israel are going to be destroyed. But you have to understand, why did Haman decide to destroy Am Yisrael? Why did Haman decide to destroy Am Yisrael? Because who didn't bow down to him? Because Mordechai didn't bow down to him. So because Mordechai doesn't bow down to him, right, Haman does this decree, so Mordechai feels very responsible. Also, when he's wearing sak va'efer, what does it mean? When do you wear sak va'efer? When do you wear sackcloth? Only when you think the end is near, you're in mourning. Right? When you think that the end is near, and when Mordechai does it, what's the reaction throughout all of Am Yisrael? In every Medina, when they hear this, Evel Gadol LaYudim, everyone's getting the right message. Which means, when Mordechai is rending his clothes and he's wearing sak va'efer, what does everyone understand? The end of Bnei Israel is here. Everyone, when they're doing Tzomu B'chiyu Misped, what are they making a hesped about? First of all, when do we only make a hesped? When someone dies. So what are they making a hesped about? Am Yisrael. This is the end. The Holocaust is coming. That's what Bnei Israel feel. They feel powerless, right? They feel that they cannot change their destiny, even though somewhere inside, all of this is also bringing a certain amount of tefillah. But deep down inside, we see that Avelut is the main component. And in this situation, who does Mordechai really turn to? He turns to Esther. Now, this is very interesting to us, because what do we know about Esther? She's passive in the beginning of the Megillah. She doesn't really take any action. She doesn't say one word in the beginning of the Megillah. But also, even more so, right, what do we know happened with the story of Amalek? What do we know when Bnei Israel really tried to defeat Amalek? The first time, they were not successful in the Torah. The second time, with Shaul, they were not successful in defeating Amalek completely, right? So what does it seem like? That Amalek is always going to be there as an obstacle, and Bnei Israel are never going to defeat it. And that is a terrible thought, because Amalek, right, is the ultimate evil, and the idea that it limits, right, the majesty of Hashem in this world. Excuse me. Let's speak about another tack for a second. Let's go to Esther, Perek Bet, number 13. We're on page 2, the bottom of page 2, number 13. When Esther is introduced to us, right, we only know about her through her identification with Mordechai. How is Mordechai introduced to us? He is Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Ishiminiv. Who's missing in his lineage? Shaul is missing in his lineage. Shaul is missing in his lineage, even though he is a great-grandson of Shaul, because Shaul doesn't destroy Amalek. Because Shaul doesn't destroy Amalek, right, his name is erased from the family history. He is erased from the kings. He doesn't have continuity. His son doesn't take over. David takes over. And as a result, ironically, how do we identify Mordechai? As a Yehudi. As someone from Yehuda. So even Mordechai, the great leader of the time, who really is from Shaul's family, how do we identify him? We identify him as a Yehudi. So what are we going to see is going to be Esther's role throughout Megillat Esther? She's going to have to bring back, right, the Malchut of Shaul and his name, right, back into the loop of history. And that is going to be part of Esther's job. But let's look even further back. Number 11 on page 2. There's a famous Midrash Tanchuma, right? Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, Masoret Agadahi She'ein Esav Nofel Ela Biyad Bnei Banei Shel Rachel. What does that mean? What does that mean? Help me here. What does that mean? Let's say it louder. Esav can only be destroyed by Rachel's sons. Excellent. Now, what's interesting about that phraseology? What's interesting about that phraseology? Okay, she has two sons, right? So that means that the children of Yosef and the children of Binyamin are going to destroy Amalek. And we know that's true. Give me some examples. Yoshua's from what Shevet? Ephraim, right? Binyamin, right? Shaul comes from Binyamin. He tries to destroy Amalek. Mordechai, Yehudi, and Esther, they are from Binyamin. But also, what do we have in Sefer Ovadia? What do we have in Sefer Ovadia? That Esav's going to be like Kash and Bet Yosef is going to be like Lahava. So there also we have Bnei Banei Shel Rachel. But we also know that it's not just Rachel's children that have to fight Esav. We know that all of Am Yisrael are always fighting Esav. So why are we saying Bnei Banei Shel Rachel? It's Yaakov and Esav. Why don't we say Bnei Yaakov? Of course it also evens out to Rachel. But why are we talking about Rachel? Second question. Also, when we want to go back on the lineage, if you look at the top of page 3, 14, 15, and 16, when we're talking about who Esther is like, she's like Shaul, because he's quiet, right? And then she's like Rachel, because she was quiet. And we see this idea of quietude or quietness, right, is going down in the lineage, which means when Chazal want to speak about certain traits, right, that run in certain families, and whether we see it coming out in the men of the family or we see it coming out in the women of the family, who are we going back to show that that person is really the one who is the progenitor or is the first? We see that many times we see it's the Isha. So not only is Esther going to be playing this important role, but we see that this really goes back all the way to Rachel's destiny, which means this idea of bringing justice, truth, fighting against evil, fighting against Amalek, right, destroying those kind of things and injustice is something that is the job of the Nashim. We see that the women play a very important role in bringing Torah, mitzvot, tova, bracha, right? The idea of tov, the idea of tzedek, or mishpat, is not just, oh, Avraham is giving this legacy down to all the generations. But what we're also seeing is that it's a legacy, so too, of the Imahot, but especially we see this idea that is branching down from Rachel. And where do we see that this comes out strongly in the Megillah? Let's go back to page number 3. And look what we see in page number 3. When Mordechai feels he cannot do it, who are we going to call? Right? When Mordechai sees he's already depressed, he already thinks that he's in despair, he has no options, who is he going to call now to try to fix the situation? Esther. Which means, in the end, right, it is going to be Esther. The legacy that Rachel starts is going to have to be finished by Esther. So what does Mordechai do? Okay, so we're on page 3, and we're in number 18, and we are on Pasuk Chet. Esther doesn't know what's happening. She's sitting in the castle, in the palace. And he brings to Esther to tell her, Litzavot alea, lavo el hamelech litchaneno. What does he say she has to do? He has to beg. She has to beg. She has to beg before Ahasuerus. And what does Esther say? Of course I'm not going to beg. Because I wasn't called for 30 days. And what does Mordechai answer? Al tadami b'nafshech. What does it mean, al tadami b'nafshech? Don't be selfish. Don't think about your own life. How many people are there? A whole nation is waiting for you to do something. And you're caring about your own life, right? And you're going to hide in the castle, in the palace? Who else? And I mentioned this another time, right? Who else hides in the palace and you look out and she sees all the people and she says, I'm not like that. I separate myself. It's not mechubah to dance and sing with everybody else. No. Right? Michal bat Shaul. Right? Michal bat Shaul is looking at David dancing, mefazezu mecharker. He says, we don't do that. So what is Mordechai telling Esther? Don't be like Michal. Don't be like Shaul where you're standing back and you're not getting involved. This is your chance to step up. And she has a choice. Right? He also says, don't be quiet like Shaul. Right? And also he says, Hashem is always going to save Am Yisrael. But this is your chance to bring a tikkun for your family. And the Sfat Emet says something very pretty here. The Sfat Emet says that here we have Esther, right? She is not only going to bring a tikkun for what Shaul did, but in addition we see that she is also going to bring in a very interesting concept. When she goes to the Chachamim and she says, Kva'uni ledorot, what does she realize? That the only way to get this Chag enacted is through the act of the Chachamim. Which means till now, most of the chagim that we have come from what? Torah. It says it in Torah. When Esther goes to the chachamim and says, Kva'uni ledorot, she's showing that the Torah Shebaal Peh and the chachamim really have an unbelievable power. Which means she is actually a partner with them. And the Sfat Emet says the same thing about Miriam. When we use the idea of Be'er for Miriam, the Be'er is a symbol of Torah. And ironically, Miriam is a symbol of Torah Shebaal Peh. Because what was her hallmark? Talking, her mouth. So the Sfat Emet again wants to parallel between Miriam and Esther. This idea of linking yourself to the Mesorah all the way back and understanding, right, the creative power, right, of the Chachamim and of Dvar Hashem. So when Mordechai says all these things to her, she responds, get all the Jews together. Number one, when Mordechai is crying and all the Medinot, they're all spread out, the Avelut and the depression, Bnei Yisrael are am meforad mefozar b'chol ha'anim. What does Esther say? You get them all together. Number two, not only get them all together, you have to fast for 3 days. But this fast sounds different. It's not a fast of avelut. Here, it's a fast of optimism, which means she's going to go to the king and maybe something will happen. And here she's saying, kasher avadati, avadati. She's willing to take her chances and her future. As opposed to Shaul, did not want to accept, right, what his fate was when he wasn't destroying Amalek. So what does Esther decide to do? How does she decide to destroy Amalek? As we said, she does the two parties. She realizes that jealousy, right, and all those things really destroy an individual. Esav was almost destroyed by jealousy because he wanted to kill Yaakov. And also Shaul HaMelech was almost destroyed by jealousy because he only was focused on killing David. So she realizes what jealousy can do. And of course, in the party, in the second party, when she already points to Haman as the enemy, Ahasuerus is willing because Haman already showed his true colors. He was in the palace in the middle of the night. When he was asked, how do you want to give favor to someone? He said, I'm giving the horse, give him the clothes, and give him the crown of the king. So what is Ahasuerus already understanding? Haman is so emboldened that he is pretty much saying openly that he wants to overthrow the king. And that's what Ahasuerus realizes, but who, of course, masterminded all this? Esther Hamalka. So my question to you is, why didn't Esther just follow Mordechai's advice? What did Mordechai say? Throw yourself down at Ahasuerus' feet. Why does she do this whole detour with Haman? So why does she do this whole detour with Haman? Because what did she want to do? Destroy Amalek, destroy Haman. Because she has to do a tikkun. She has to fix up what happened with Shaul, right, and Amalek. And also, what was it? She had to destroy evil. Meaning her job was to destroy evil and Amalek. And the only way to bring Kvod Hashem into this world more is by destroying Amalek. And also, they don't take from the booty, as opposed to what Shaul did. Also, what don't they do? They don't kill the women and children, even though they were given permission to kill the women and the children. But now I want to focus on the last words of the Megillah. So we see a tikkun, tit for tat. They don't take the money. They don't kill the women and children. They defend themselves, right? But let's go to the end of the Megillah. Let's go to the end. We're now on the last page. And we are on Pasuk Yutet. Okay, we're on page 4, we're on number 26, which is Perek Tet. We're at the end of the Megillah, and we're in Pasuk Yutet. And these are our last psukim in the, almost the last psukim in the Megillah. What do Bnei Israel do as a result? They make Purim, right? A mishteve simcha. Look at number Pasuk Yutet. So what do? Right? They make simcha u'mishte, which means in one place we say mishte v'simcha, and the other place we say simcha u'mishte v'yom tov u'mishloach manot, right? Ish l're'ehu, which means in the beginning when we talk about it, right, what do we say? They made it a mishte v'simcha, drinking and then simcha. But if you look later, right, what does Purim really develop into? Right? It develops into simcha u'mishte v'yom tov, which means it's not just, oh, we drink and we're happy. Meaning as, right, it became more nafots among all the different cities, it became a simcha, but a more serious simcha. A simcha, and then we say mishte, also a yom tov. And mishloach manot ish l're'ehu, which means community became important. And not only did community become important, we also do matanot la'evyonim. And not only do we do matanot la'evyonim, look at Pasuk Zayin, number 27, kimu v'kiblu ha'yudim alehem, which means these actions were accepted by all of Am Yisrael. And we have a beautiful midrash, right, that Bnei Yisrael accepted here the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah Shebichtav, that earlier, how did they accept? Right, they accepted forcibly, right, that kafa lehem har kigigit. But if you look at Pasuk Kavchet, right, it says that yimei ha-purim ha'ele lo yavru mitoch ha-yudim vezichram lo yasuf mizaram. Which means, of course, we do all the halachot of Purim. And we party, and we do mishloach manot, and matanot la'evyonim. But what's very important about Purim is not to forget it. Which means just like we don't forget Amalek, we're not forgetting Purim. V'zichram lo yasuf mizaram. And look at Pasuk Kavtet. V'tichtov Esther Hamalka. Just like we said, k'tov zot zikaron basefer, just like we saw in Shemot, that you have to remember what happened to Amalek, and we write it in a book, and we remember it, and it has to be remembered for all generations. Already in Megillat Esther, it's telling us that Purim, which is a testimony against Amalek, right, also has to be remembered for all generations. Because the way we stood up to Amalek, the way we saw Yad Hashem, the way we fought for the right principles, the way we accepted and reinstated Torah Shebichtav, and especially Torah Shebaal Peh, right, the famous idea that Purim is the Torah Shebaal Peh holiday. Why is it Torah Shebaal Peh holiday? Because it was only enacted by what? By the Divrei Chachamim, right? It's not in the Torah, right? Esther Minayin, Haster Astir Panai. We find an Asmachta, but really clearly, right, it is an enactment, right, of Chazal. It's the Chag of Torah Shebaal Peh. And who is the one that really makes sure that the words of Chazal and Torah Shebaal Peh are accepted and remembered? It is Esther Hamalka. So that is the nexus that we see between Esther Hamalka. And if you look at Pasuk Lamed, they send out books, again, the idea of books and writing and remembering, to all the 127 lands of Persia, of Paras u'Madai. What do they send out? And what is sent out as a result? Look at Pasuk Lamed. Divrei Shalom ve'emet. We started with the evil of Amalek. We started with the idea of remembering that evil. But how do we combat it? By sending out Divrei Shalom ve'emet. After the Jews only defended themselves and really acted in such a special way, after this event, what was sent out? Divrei Shalom ve'emet. That is the message and that is the lesson that we see in Megillat Esther that is sent around after Purim. To really enact Yimei HaPurim Ha'ele on the days, and that we should remember Kimu al Nafsham va'al Zaram. And if you look at the end, in Lamed Aleph, what does it say? Divrei Hatzomot v'Zakatam. What would you expect? That the end of Megillat Esther should end with what? The days of what? Divrei Mishte v'Simcha. Which means even at the end of Megillat Esther, when it's a celebration, a partying, Mishte v'Simcha, what is the last message that Megillat Esther wants to leave with us? what brought about this Mishteh V'Yom Tov? What brought about this Hatzalah of Am Yisrael? The Zaka, the Tzom, how Esther prepared, right? How Bnei Yisrael really realized that they don't have anyone else to rely on but to fast and look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Esther realized that she has to take a stand, that she has to do something. And that's why when we go into Purim, how are we going in? By reading Parshat Zachor, by reading the Haftarah of Zachor, by reading the Kriya of Amalek in the morning of Purim. Because Purim is about being saved in an incredible way, but by us really turning to Hashem, by us doing the right thing, justice, Torah, mitzvot, right? And by tzom, b'chi, right? Turning and understanding, right? And how to focus on the right values. And then once you do that, what could it lead to? It could lead to Mishteh v'Simcha. But without this preparation, without understanding what Purim stands for, you can't celebrate Purim. And that's why the Smak, the Maharil, right? So many different views, right? And explanations of the first Mishnah that we did. How come we have the Arba Parshiyot? How come we have to read Shabbat Zachor, Parshat Zachor before Purim? Because you can't understand Purim without understanding and internalizing the message of what Amalek could have done to us. And that's why, number 28, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Shalcha Lahem Esther Lachachamim, what we read before, Kva'uni Ladorot, establish me for generations. So Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i says, K'tov Zot, right? K'tov Zot Zikaron B'Sefer V'Sim Bozne Yoshua, K'tov Zot, Ma Shekatuv Kanu B'Mishne Torah, what's written in Shmot, and in Dvarim, right? The story of Amalek, and also the remembrance of Amalek. Zikaron, ma shekatuv b'Nevi'im. B'Sefer, ma shekatuv b'Megillah. What Esther does is link for us Ketuvim, Nevi'im, and Torah. She is the link in that chain of the Mesorah. And she links that with what? The next level, which is the continuity of Chazal, the continuity of Torah Shebaal Peh, the continuity of this Mesorah, Shezichram lo yasuf mizaram. And that's why Purim, Ta'anit Esther, and going back to Shabbat Zachor are all inextricably linked, but they're also showing us, right, that the history of Am Yisrael, the fate of Am Yisrael, right, and the legacy of Am Yisrael are really all intertwined. And of course, for us, the message is clear. Right? Who is really the heroine of this story? It's really Esther. It really could have been Megillat Mordechai, but it's really Megillat Esther, and we call it Megillat Esther, and it's Ta'anit Esther because of this role that Esther played. And I just want to leave it as a message for all of us that our koach to bring justice, to bring Torah mitzvot, to bring Dvar Hashem, to bring the words of the Mesorah and the reality of the Mesorah into this world is really very clear. We all have our inner kochot. Esther was very passive in the beginning, right? So it's not only people who are so outgoing, right? And for sure, you see certain sparks in them from the beginning. Everybody has this opportunity to really make a difference. Everybody has the ability to bring Geula Olam and to really be the catalyst for Anes. You're here in your year of your tipping point, right? Esther at one point has to make a decision. You too have to make decisions. How your future is going to go. What is going to be your next step? So I think the time of Purim, the time of Shabbat Zachor, is a time to make sure that all the lessons that you learned this year, all of the wonderful spiritual growth that you made, should really be used in a way to bring Geula la'olam. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to remind you, on Sunday we're going to have financial meetings here with the Director of Student Finance. If any of you have questions about finances or any questions for me, I'm more than happy to have a meeting with you then. So sign up on the sign-up sheet upstairs on the bulletin board. And just a reminder for all of you, whatever your college plans are, file the FAFSA now so that you can get as much money as you possibly can, right? So I look forward to seeing you guys soon. Thank you.